All right, sports fans, welcome back to another episode of Plugged In with Chris Howard. I'm your host, Chris Howard. I got him back again. It seems like it's been a while, but I got my guy back, Jason Jepson. Jason, what's going on, man?
You know, doing good, brother, doing good. We took a little break for Thanksgiving, which was nice. You know, we did our thing with family and friends, as I'm sure you did. Always blessed. And, you know, you leave Thanksgiving right after and bam, let's start shopping.
Yeah.
Let's get that done.
Right into Christmas. I saw the pictures you posted. Well, you actually sent me the pictures of Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah.
And I think I texted you. I was like, dude, we need to try to figure out how to get you on like Rachel Ray or somebody, because this is just absolutely insane what you're up here cooking. And for those that don't remember the last podcast, Jason and I were talking about his Thanksgiving meal. Just give them a rundown, Jason, of what you made.
All right, we did a sage and three different apple stuffed turkey with a molasses butter drizzle on top to trap the moisture and also give a little sweetness. I did a roasted garlic and goat cheese mashed potatoes, did Parmesan fresh cracked black pepper carrot fries, did sweet potato gnocchi with a honey butter sage drizzle. Let's see.
The drizzle is killing me right now.
I did a bourbon pecan pie, but I did a crushed pretzel crust. So you get some of the saltiness that offset the bourbon, and then did day old donut bread pudding. Cause there's not enough sugar in bread puddings. So, you know, you gotta get the day old donuts in there. We did the sweet potato stacks with bacon in between and put those in the cupcake tins, poured hot butter, brown butter over the top, and then baked those. So the bacon crisp in between and the sweet potatoes got good. It was a good day. I'll tell you what, here's the funny part. So everyone's eating and I sit down at the end of the table and I still got my apron on and everything, and I've got a glass of wine and everyone's eating, and they say, are you gonna sit down and eat? I go, no, I gotta get, you know, the desserts prepped real quick, gotta check the bread pudding, do a couple other things, serve dessert, and everyone's there. And I'm like, to the gal whose house we were at, Miss Allison, I'm like, Allison, you know, where's that spare bedroom again? She goes, down the hall to the left. I went back there, I laid down, went to sleep for like 45 minutes
while everyone's eating.
Everyone's eating. I was sleeping.
Yeah. Isn't that's kind of the story of being the cook, right? Like, you don't really get a chance to enjoy the food. Your enjoyment comes from watching everyone else enjoy the food. So when you made all this food, especially all this drizzle and shit, did you like send out and find out like who's diabetic or not? Because I just feel like,
listen, I used blood to, I pressure used to, I used is to going through the game. Roof. I used to play that game. Like, oh, you don't like this. Oh, okay. You don't do, you know, the whole thing. Oh, I'm a little lactose intolerant. You know, the whole thing. No. I sent out the menu of what I'm making. If you don't like it, don't eat it.
Right. Yeah.
Like I'm not a short order cook, right? I'm doing the shopping. I'm prepping for a couple of days. I'm up at 5 a.m. starting to cook. Your diet no longer dictates. Now, if you don't want to have it, or, you know, there's a little too much butter, it's going to slow your heart down. You got to pop a couple pills. Pop your pills, man. But we're going to have a good time.
I hear you, man. Listen, well, now I know. So whenever I come down for Thanksgiving, you know, I may bring some sugar pills with me to balance out my blood sugar. But yeah, man, I mean, that sounded amazing. Like, just absolutely crazy. Who taught you how to cook? Where did you learn how to cook?
So when I was in high school, I was in a restaurant, and I was actually just a dishwasher at first. And it just, you know, gave me walking around money, things like that. And through high school and part of college, I was back in the kitchen and a place in Big Fork, Montana, called Eagle Bend Resort Golf Course, very famous golf course. And they brought in really talented chefs in the summer. So I just got to be around these guys and just got to listen. And I move up from, you know, I was working the fryer, then I was the salad guy, then I was a dessert chef, I was making desserts, they were telling me what to make. Then I was out on the 19th green on the grill cooking and serving burgers to all these affluent golfers and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of moved my way around. Very blessed to learn how to, you know, throw some food together and have a good time.
Man, okay. Well, listen, I don't know how long you and I have known each other, but this is the first time I'm actually hearing that story. So Man, it looks like, man, let me tell you, when you have friendships, you're constantly learning new things about your friends. I promise, though, folks, this actually is a sports show, but I just had to dive into that because I just started thinking about, especially after I just finished eating a salad and a bowl of fruit for dinner, I just started thinking about like Jason's food. But I promise you, this is a sports show. And actually, we're going to jump into Round of Sports right now. All right, Jay. So first story is Nebraska interim head coach Mickey Joseph was arrested on domestic abuse charges. Mickey Joseph, who served as interim head coach for Nebraska Cornhuskers for 9 games this season, was arrested Wednesday on suspicion of strangulation and third-degree domestic assault, the Lincoln Police Department said. The Lincoln Police Department said officers were dispatched to a residence on a domestic disturbance call. After an investigation, officers arrested Joseph at a separate location and booked him into Lancaster County Jail. Well, I think it's if everything is true, right? I don't like to, say this is absolute without, there being a full investigation of what happened. But if all of this is true, his career is pretty much over. That's pretty much a wrap.
Yeah, I agree with you. You still got to be proven guilty in this country, right? But that said, I think some things are pretty basic. You don't put your hands on a woman, you just don't do it. And if that is the case, yeah, your career in this is over. Now, it's just you're a role model in some capacity, right? And you are a father figure in other capacities to young men. You just are. And in that, I don't care what position it is, but especially for this conversation in this position, got to go to the curb, man. Can't be around these kids anymore. Can't play with the nonsense anymore. Nope. Not gonna happen.
Especially now because of domestic violence, the way it's been handled in the professional leagues, in the NFL, NBA, the way it's been handled so poorly there, especially with everything that's happening in college football, there literally is no a zero tolerance, even if through a full investigation, because once you get that scarlet letter, man, whether you're guilty or not, it's very hard to keep that person on your staff. I mean, and honestly, with Nebraska, I mean, they were going in a different direction anyway with Matt Rhule now being the head coach there. But if you're Mickey Joseph, you had an opportunity for these 9 games to literally audition for other programs, right? But now you've just made yourself completely and absolutely unhirable, regardless of what the outcome is, right? Now,
Oh, absolutely.
if the investigation shows he's completely innocent and everything was made up, you still carry that scarlet letter no matter what. And now it takes someone to really have to take a chance on you and their program. And as we all know, rarely does that happen. Right? Who's really going to stick their neck out for to say that, hey, I know this guy, I trust his character, he was exonerated. Very rarely do you get those type of opportunities because now your coaching job is on the line.
Yeah, and let's be real candid here. The instance of what could be a crime is talked about and pushed a lot more than any exoneration. Which is, it's like a mistake in the newspaper. They don't post those on the front page. Back bottom, get that real fine print, get the magnifying glass out. We made a mistake in column, XYZ. So I would.
There'll be 10 articles on the investigation, and there'll be one paragraph on the exoneration, right?
And I would also say, there'll be 10 articles on what they could have done, what's happening, what's going on. And there'll be also a half a page on his guilt and nothing put forth on, the impact of sports and how we all can do better in treating women.
Absolutely. Well, again, if it's the story is true, these are the consequences. And if it's not, if he is, found not guilty, hopefully he gets a second chance. But Just from this reporting alone, doesn't look good. But staying in the Big Ten, Jason, well, since the Buckeyes, I can't wait to get into talking about this game. But since the Buckeyes landed at the number five spot.
Now, why are they at the number five spot? They were number
Yes,
two,
they
right?
were number two. Funny, something happened this week. Something really big happened this week. Oh, yeah, that's right. Michigan beat the. Oh, I was getting ready to curse. Michigan beat them squarely and fairly in a competition this past weekend. That's what happened.
That's right.
But yeah, so the Buckeyes fall to the number five spot. Now, the Rose Bowl said they are strongly considering taking Penn State instead of the Buckeyes. But according to Ohio State Rivals, the Buckeyes themselves requested that the Rose Bowl take Penn State instead of the Buckeyes since they didn't make the playoffs. Now, I feel like Michigan must have really broke Ohio State for them to come out and say that they don't even want to go play in the Rose Bowl.
I mean, they are taking their pads and going home, son. They're just like, no, no more. No.
We're gonna start working on the next Michigan game right now. Like, screw the Rose Bowl. We don't want to go to California. We don't want to go party. I mean, they're literally turning down an opportunity to play the Rose Bowl. And if you know anything about the Big Ten, playing in the Rose Bowl is a really, really big thing, right? That's a
Yeah.
big bowl to play in. Now, maybe they feel a certain kind of way since they fell to the number five spot. Maybe they feel they don't earn it. Maybe they feel like they didn't earn it. Maybe they feel they don't deserve it. I don't know, but it just seems really weird for them to turn down the opportunity to go play in a Rose Bowl.
And question for you, I mean, you're a young athlete, you're getting recruited by Michigan, you're getting recruited by the Buckeyes, you're getting recruited by Notre Dame, and you see this, do you want to go play for a team that if they lose, you don't get to continue to showcase your talents on one of the biggest stages for these young men? I mean, the Rose Bowl is not small cheddar. That's a huge stage. It's an immensely watched game. It's in a great location. You've got advertisers, you have sponsors, you have agents, you have teams, you have players of teams that live in that area that go to that game. I mean, this to me is more than a temper tantrum. This is hurting young men's opportunity to be seen and maybe leave a year early.
Yeah, I think it feels if that's the case, I feel like it had to be a team decision. I don't think that this would be like a coaching or a university administration decision. I feel like this would have to be a team decision, just simply because, as athletes, we tend to over dramatize things, right?
Okay.
Like we want to create a narrative or create something that's going to give us that extra chip on our shoulder, right? So I kind of feel like they may have said to themselves, because they were basically embarrassed, right, in their own stadium, do they really feel like they deserve to go play in the Rose Bowl, right? Do they? I feel like they're if that's the case, I feel like they're putting this, they're imposing this sanction on themselves. Right? They're putting this punishment on themselves because of their performance. I feel like that's more the situation as opposed to saying, we're just not going to go play in a Rose Bowl because, we feel like we should have been in the college football playoffs instead. Right?
Yeah, but I mean, I'm also, hey man, it's Ohio. It's January. There were some boosters that wanted to get out of town. All right. I mean, listen,
Right.
someone's getting in trouble, okay? It's going
Right.
to be a
Y'all
team
ruined it for a
talking
lot of
to
people.
for a lot of people because their last sunburns, all right, have one too many frozen margaritas on the beach. Their dreams are dashed now. It's selfish.
Imagine being a booster and then you hear the news that the team is deciding not to go play in the Rose Bowl. And you're
You
like, wait a
got
minute, hold on.
half it open. You're like J. Crew shorts. All right, we're going 36 short. I'm going Magnum PI. I'm gonna get a mustache.
I
What?
just
Hold
booked a
on.
room. Like, I booked some flights. You know what I
Yep.
mean? Like, imagine being a booster or a fan, and then you find out that they're not going to go play in a Rose
I hope all Ohio State fans and boosters go to the Rose Bowl game, dress in their Ohio State gear with, wish you were here, and also some tans. All right, just take up some seats. Just
That would be classic. That would be classic. All right, moving on. So, Jason, our favorite guy, well, one of our favorite guys, Odell Beckham Jr., kicked off the plane after going in and out of consciousness. Now, of course, his attorney says the flight attendants were overzealous in removing him, because what really happened was he just didn't put on his seatbelt. Now, I'm pretty sure, especially in this day and age, that flight attendants know the difference between someone going in and out of consciousness and someone just kind of refusing to put on their seatbelt, because flight attendants have been going through a lot of shit since COVID, right? You're dealing with a lot.
We got cameras in Ubers. Start putting some cameras in these planes. Put some cameras in.
People are on the plane. That's the thing. People are on the plane and they're videotaping what's happening, right? So there's footage of him being escorted through the airport by police. So now I don't know if there's footage of what actually happened on a plane, but there's footage of him being escorted by the police. And then there's passengers who are basically corroborating what the flight attendants are saying.
Mm-hmm.
So for you to come out and say that it was just it's a misunderstanding, and really what happened was because you didn't want to put on your seatbelt, just sounds like some bullshit, especially with his history, right? His track record.
I thought he had private jet money. I mean, I know they're expensive, but I thought he had some private jet money.
First class money?
First class, I mean, something. I'm sure he does. And, I think you've talked about this a lot. When people know your name and know your face and you're out there, everyone's looking for a buck. Everyone's looking for an angle. The people just are. And flight attendants, that could have been her first flight in the morning. She could have been coming off a flight halfway across the world. Who knows? But you're right. They deal with a ton of dumb shit on every flight.
Yeah.
All the time. And the one thing is pretty cool, though, is outside of like first class and really special flights, you're all treated the same.
Yeah.
Buckle up.
Yeah.
Put your seat forward. Put your tray table away. Can't put your bag there. It's Dolce. Can't put your bag there. I don't care what its name is.
Right.
It doesn't belong there.
Right.
Odell's flown enough.
Yeah.
He's a grown man. You sit down, you know you're tired, you're going to fall asleep, click clack.
Yeah. And he said also that, he gets enough attention, and this is not the type of attention that he's looking for. Well, it's amazing how these types of attention follows you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so if you're really, trying to go unnoticed, if you're really trying to fly under the radar, this isn't it.
Mm-mm.
This is not it. Whether you say you weren't going in and out of conscious, then why are we having an issue with you over a seatbelt?
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. You can't be, I don't want to be known for the catch, and then wear a t-shirt with the catch on it and then be pissed off when people ask you about it.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, it's full of contradictions.
Yeah. I just think the statement his attorney put out just seemed like a bunch of crap, and just seemed like it's just another PR nightmare for Odell Beckham Jr., who's trying to sign, with another team, right? So he's actually flying around the country trying to find another team, and then you have this type of situation happen. So, it's very hard to feel sorry for guys like Odell, because these are really self-inflicted wounds, right? Mm-hmm. These really are.
Oh, no, they are. And hey, Odell, these teams you want to get, these owners, they got private jets. You have them send the jet for you.
He's friends with Drake.
Okay.
Have Drake send you a plane.
Yeah. Hey, I'm not good around people on planes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jerry will get the plane. You're out.
Yeah. Yeah. I like, we had a guy in Jacksonville that I played with. For whatever reason, he had an issue getting to practice on time. So what did Coach Coughlin do? He had a driver go pick him up and drive him to practice every single day. These are not hard. These are not difficult issues to fix. If you want to, pop you a Molly or whatever it is on the plane, get a private plane.
Yeah.
Like, get your shit together, man. It's, like I said, it's just really hard to feel sorry for these cats, because they've got all the talent in the world. And it's just like, you're constantly in the news for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And then you're expecting people to give you multiple millions of dollars, multiple contracts. That's not a safe investment. So I don't know, man. Well, when we come back, Jason and I are going to jump into the game. The game, the biggest rivalry in all of college football, which is starting to even out. Let me stop. Okay, let me get off that. It's not really evening out. You guys are so far ahead of us. But it's great to get, you know, back-to-back wins to, you know, just to start to make it the rivalry be an actual rivalry again. So when we come back, we're going to talk about the game. All right, Jason. So, man, this was the weekend. You know, a good friend of mine who is a producer for Fox Sports. You know, he was at a meeting leading up to the game, right? So he's at a meeting and they're having this production meeting, and he said, you know, he's taking notes, and they said, well, who do we have for the Michigan Ohio State game? And he thought to himself, he's like, wait a minute. He's like, I know somebody who went there and played there. He actually won a national championship. And so he mentioned my name in the meeting. And they're like, you know, do you think he'd do it? So he called me and he told me about the opportunity. It was a digital tailgate experience for Fox Sports, where essentially you bring a guy from Michigan and a guy from Ohio State who played in the game. And they basically just watch the game together and comment on the game as the game is playing live. And we have a host who's asking us questions. We're taking questions from the fans on Twitter. And I was like, hell yeah. I was like, so, you know, where are we going to do this? So I was like, yeah, we're going to fly you out to the studio in LA. I was like, LA? I'm like, but the game is in is Columbus. They're like, yeah, but we're going to do it in the studio. I was like, listen, enough said. Like, that, are you paying me? And what time do I got to fly out?
There you go.
Like, yes. And yes, I was like, all right, let's go. So flew out to L.A., got there Friday evening, stayed at the Fairmont in Century City. Beautiful hotel.
Great hotel. Love it.
You know, ate dinner there by myself. You know what? The other part of this is, you know, when you are old and your friends are old, when you call them and tell them that you're in town and you haven't seen them in a long time. And they're like, hey, man, great, great to have you here. Let us know how it goes.
Yeah.
Like, no one's trying to meet you out.
No. Like, is it past 9?
Yeah.
I hope you have a great time tomorrow.
Yeah. We hope you kill it. We hope you kill it tomorrow. I'm sure you'll be awesome. And that was it. So I like literally ate dinner there. You know, there's the Westfield Mall that's like right down the street from there. So I walked over there and walked around. It was really awesome. And so they brought in Mike Weber, who played at Ohio State. He's much younger than I am. And Mike was really cool. I think people thought just because, you know, Ohio State, Michigan, you know, they really hate each other. It's really not that bad. Now, I'm not going to say the hate isn't bad, but we know how to be cordial around each other. Right. And it was fun, man. We had a great time watching the game. I mean, I had a great time watching the game. I'm not too sure Mike had a great time watching the game.
Mike had a couple of great moments.
He had some great moments. But then he got caught when, like, I don't know, like Donovan Edwards' 10th touchdown. It was just like he was just in a pit of despair. Me, on the other hand, was in a pit of happiness. Like, I could not believe what I was watching. Going into the game.
How nervous? Hold on real quick. How nervous were you?
For the game or just being on?
No.
Digital experience.
When as close as the score was, digital experience, as close as the score is, and we're coming up to halftime and clock management goes, it's like people forgot there was a clock. They're like, we just hang out. We just get to hang out.
Yeah. You know what? Harbaugh is great at making second half adjustments. Mm-hmm. But his clock management is to be desired, to say the least, right? It hasn't always been on point. And you know, that could be for a variety of reasons. You know, J.J. McCarthy is a young quarterback. You know, it's loud. You know, if you've ever been in the horseshoe, especially as the enemy, it is super loud in that stadium. Very hard to hear. Communication is very difficult. So a lot of things can play into that, but he hasn't been very good at clock management, just regardless of where he plays. Doesn't even matter. Yeah. So, but for me, you know, kind of going into the game, I'll be honest. I didn't think we would win simply because we lost all of our offense, which was Blake Corum, right?
Yeah.
Blake Corum was probably represented over 85% of our offense, right? So he was the offense. So you see him go out there with the brace on and you're like, oh, Jesus, right? You're like, this isn't good. On top of that, his backup, Donovan Edwards, we didn't know if he was going to play because he played with a cast on his hand. So we're down to our third string running back. And then his backup is a walk-on. No disrespect to walk-ons. He's a great kid. He's done really well. But everything that we thought Michigan would be successful at in order to win the game, which was running the ball, we no longer had. And so everything that we knew that we were going to need at that point to beat Ohio State, which was throw the ball, we hadn't been very good at.
Yeah. So, didn't you guys have like one rushing yard after the first quarter?
Exactly. So we had 1 yard rushing in the first quarter, but somehow I think we go into half, what, down 3?
10-7. Yeah.
Three, or it was either 17-14. Folks, listen.
Yeah.
I played a lot of football, a lot of concussions. I don't remember anything. Okay. I just know it was close. So to say that Michigan is in a close game with Ohio State, who can put up numbers in bunches really, really quickly, to go into that half with the score being very close with like 1 yard rushing, right? I felt really, really good. And I made a comment on television. I said, you know what? I said, this is starting to feel like when I played, because even though Ohio State was the better team on paper, mm-hmm. They were driving the ball. Like if the field was 100 yards, 80 yards of that, they were masterful, right? But anytime they got into the red zone, they were settling for field goals, right? Touchdown, maybe settling for field goals. And they were doing that same thing. And so I was like, okay, this is starting to have a different feel to it because they're letting us hang around, right? And then, of course, we hit the big play to Cornelius Johnson, who takes it to the house. Then a play after that, you know, another 60-yarder, he takes it to the house. So you're in this game without your greatest weapon, which was Blake Corum. So at that point in the game, I'm thinking like, okay, we're in it. On top of that, Michigan is a better second half team than they are first half team. I think going into the game, Michigan outscored their opponents a 107-3 in the second half. Now, granted, some of those opponents were terrible, right? But still, that showed that Michigan knew how to turn it on and make adjustments in the second half. And with Ohio State, as long as you don't get into a quote unquote shootout with Ohio State, if you can get into a shootout with Ohio State, your odds of beating them are pretty good. Now, Ohio State had injuries as well. They were missing Travion Henderson. I don't think Mayan Williams played very much. I think they played a running. They had a freshman running back, and they had a running back that was a converted linebacker playing. And so it was pretty much even now, right? Everyone's strength in going into that game was kind of nullified. Now, Ohio State, their biggest problem to me is they get very, very pass happy. If you go back and look at that game, they were running the ball pretty good. You know what I mean? Like they were picking up 4, 5 yards, 6 yards, some big runs. They had some big opportunities, but Ryan Day gets pass happy. He wants to do the thing that's sexy, right? But how can you blame him when you got Marvin Harrison, marvelous Marvin Harrison Jr., who's so good. Stover, the tight end, who's pretty good. I mean, you've got offensive weapons all over the place. So I didn't think we had a chance going into the game because of Blake Corum, but Donovan Edwards, J.J. McCarthy, Cornelius Johnson played their best games when they absolutely had to, because we've seen it from Donovan. We hadn't seen it from J.J., right? He started off the season hot. You know, he was completing over 70% of his passes, but that was against, you know, Our Lady of the blind teams that he was throwing against. So of course he was going to complete 70% of his passes, but you know, 70% of his passes was like, you know, 15 of 24 or something like that. You know what I mean? So he wasn't putting up big numbers. And he actually regressed to going from over 70% completing his passes to almost under 50% completing his passes. He wasn't connecting on the deep balls. He wasn't seeing the field really well. He was overthrowing guys. And I think going into the game, I think Michigan's biggest, longest play, passing play was 30 yards, maybe. So all the things that you needed to be great at to beat Ohio State, we weren't good at going into this game. So it's, we did everything that we needed to do to beat Ohio State, and Ohio State did everything that they needed to do to give us that game.
It was interesting, you know. So I was in I went to an Ohio State bar on purpose, just hoping you guys were going to win. My buddy drove. It was awesome. And we're there. There's just a sea of red. And we keep looking up, and I'm like, score change. He's like, what? No. Come on, man. Come on. And look up again with score change. He's like, no. And everyone, you just hear, and I'm just smiling, you know, right, ear to ear, just grinning. But the one thing that I noticed, you know, and forgive me for this, but you guys would have won like 82-0 if you had Ohio State's quarterback. And I know that there's age and experience difference and those things. I mean, JJ did great. He really did. But dang, did he miss some passes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where Ohio State, to me, obviously they have some very talented receivers, not that you guys don't, but very talented. And instead you've got, you know, you're missing things by just a couple of inches. And I'm hoping that next year that fleshes out, knowing that people see this game and they're okay with everything. You know, they're like, oh, I want to go to Michigan now. Right.
Right.
I want to go there.
Yeah.
But it was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. He, and again, talking about JJ, he was not, again, going into this game, he was not seeing the field very well. There were opportunities against Illinois where he overthrew guys wide open. He missed guys who were not just, you know, overthrowing guys, but he was missing guys who were wide open that would have been touchdowns. I mean, that Illinois game was close because of the misses that JJ had. And not only that, but the drops from the receivers.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to imagine that coming from the Illinois game that all of a sudden guys are going to be streaking down the field wide open and catching passes, and JJ is going to be hitting them in stride, right? Coming from, because you hadn't really seen it all season, and Michigan's offense wasn't built like that, right? It was a very run dominated offense. And so you knew Ohio State was going to commit its resources to stopping the run. I think what shocked me even further was the fact that once they knew Corum wasn't going to be the guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
They still stayed in that kind of man coverage, that commitment to stopping the run, right? And that's really what got them burned on the big plays. And I think it's partly overconfidence, right? Confident that your guys can man up and play against these guys, and really not understanding that it's a mismatch sport, right? My guys against your guys. You can have ultimate confidence in your guys that they're going to be able to hold up, but at the same time, you got to be smart.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Ohio State made the necessary adjustments to counter the big plays that Michigan had, because, and I get it, Michigan hadn't had a lot of big plays all year. And only the only big plays that Michigan had were from Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards. Those were the, and that was the running backs, right? So we weren't a big play potential offense in the first place. But if you see these guys reeling off big plays, you might want to start making some adjustments, right? And I think that first half probably lulled Ohio State to sleep because, again, we weren't running the ball really well. So why are you thinking that all of a sudden Donovan Edwards is going to reel off an 85-yard touchdown and a 75-yard touchdown back-to-back?
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, you're like, guys, we got him under 20 yards rushing. We're doing it.
We're good.
We're doing it. We're good. And the secondary, I don't know if they just thought that they didn't have to play. I mean, and not just bad coverage. I mean, missing tackles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really tackles that last week they were hitting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's a good learning lesson. And it's interesting too, because, you know, you see JJ have this great game. You turn on the news the next day and it's like, by the way, Cade's entered the transfer portal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think, you know, he saw the handwriting on the wall. He's like, is there another school that's really run heavy? And nothing against Cade. Like, listen, I think he's a great quarterback. But it's like the memo was out. Mm-hmm. You beat Ohio State. You're a starting quarterback this year.
Yeah. I think that decision was made the moment Harbaugh announced that there was going to be a quarterback competition. I think Cade pretty much made up in his mind that if I don't win, then I'm probably going to be out, right?
Okay.
Because, I mean, you know, Cade, for all his faults, still led this team to its first Big Ten championship. And I don't know how many years, a lot.
Yeah.
Led them to their first win over Ohio State. So going into that season, why wouldn't he think he's going to be the guy? Right?
Yeah.
Because when you're able to do those things, you should be the guy. But when you've got a young, talented kid like JJ, who is, you know, a five-star, who's got a higher ceiling, who is supposed to bring more dynamic elements to your offense, very hard to keep that kid on the bench. And I think once that happened, once that decision was made to kind of let the quarterback competition play into the third game, mm-hmm. I think it really got into Cade's head, because he didn't look like the same person. He didn't look like the same confident quarterback. He just looked like he was frustrated. And he played like it. And ultimately, he did get injured and his season was pretty much over with. And I think when his season was over, I think him and his family made a decision then that, you know, listen, we're going to sit the rest of the season out. And then we're going to reevaluate after the season is over with. And I think that's been the process that they've gone through. I think, you know, you can't not feel like shit in this situation, right? Yeah. Like, you're the quarterback who helped Michigan get back to this, and now look at the situation that you're in, right?
Mm-hmm.
That just screams, I need a new start.
Yeah, no, right? That's true. And you know what? Listen, I hope he gets one. I hope he gets a new fresh start, and I hope he plays lights out.
Yeah, I think, listen, he for Cade, he is a great leader. He's a great competitor. He's smart. He's going to do the right thing with the ball, which we can say a lot of quarterbacks in college don't do that, right? Mm-hmm. And he's very smart, very intelligent. So any school who needs a quarterback like that, right, because it's all about possessions. If you don't turn the ball over, you give yourself a great opportunity to win games. And Cade is not a quarterback that turns the ball over. So if you're looking for something that's steady, right, you need someone who's steady, who can get the ball out, make the right proper reads, not turn the ball over. That's a quarterback 80% of college football is looking for.
Yeah. Very true. Very true. Speaking of big wins and fun, did you watch any soccer?
I didn't watch a lick of soccer. And I kind of like, you know, I would click on, I would turn the channel on, I would see people cheering, and I'm like, well, maybe we won, maybe we did something great. Like, but I didn't watch any soccer. I just haven't been a soccer guy since who was the guy? Landon and all those guys.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I haven't watched soccer since then.
Yeah, I don't know who any of the players are. I have a British friend, and so we went and decided to watch the game. You know, we looked at the score 0-0, and I was like, oh, it's just how many queens you have and how many queens we have.
Mm-hmm.
Right up there. You know, it's just, I mean, it's just, it was, it's interesting. Here's the one thing, and this is where, you know, I have a lot of respect for NFL announcers. I can watch an NFL game, and even if I don't know that much, they'll tell me things. They'll show me the defense, right? They'll show me the offense. They'll show me why they ran that way.
Right.
Soccer announcers do a horrible job representing the game. They don't tell you why they're passing the ball back. They don't do anything to ingratiate people who don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most frustrating things because I've got him. He's trying to watch the game. He's like, all right, well, they're going back because they want to draw this guy over. And I was like, okay, none of that's being said. There's like, Rinaldi's got the ball. Look at him go. He's just dribbling away. You know, like, okay, but why? And NFL announcers do a fantastic job. I mean, just amazing at letting you know why.
Yeah.
Letting you know where things are missed.
Education that happens when you watch football, right?
Yep.
And like you just pointed out, you could come into a game for the first time, right? You can come in and be watching an NFL game and you could see a pass interference, right? That thing is going to be replayed and they're going to show you why. They're going to show you the tug. They're going to show you the face mask. And it's so explanatory when you say, okay, well, what's a face mask penalty? They're going to show you the guy's fingers in his face mask and the guy's head turning around 360 degrees, right?
Yep.
And you're like, oh, okay. I get why that's a face mask penalty. I get why that's targeting. I get why that is so-and-so. There's a great explanation and education that goes on with the game. Soccer is like you said, oh, you're going to the ball, let's go. And that's it.
Yeah. Or kick missed. You're like, okay, so we missed again. Why? Why'd that guy kick it then?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they can be like, oh, the quarterback's in trouble. He's coming around to his right. He can't run it. He's got to throw it. They got to make up this many yards.
Mm-hmm.
Your soccer, no. They're like, why did he kick it? He wanted to.
Yeah.
But did the coach think that kick was good? I mean, you know, he kicked it.
I don't know.
I don't know. Hey, why was that? That guy fell down. Did he die? Did he get shot?
Right.
No, he's just rolling around on the ground like a crazy person.
Right.
Okay, cool. Thanks. I'm out. Yeah. You know,
just
I want to support our men's team, but I got to watch it on mute and have like a audio book on and be working because also, you know, they don't give you a reason to follow.
Yeah. Me and my wife, we went to one of our favorite burger spots to watch the game. And by game, I mean the soccer game. It was the Kansas City Chiefs were on one television screen. And US was playing somebody on another television screen. Like, that's how crazy. I don't even know who they were playing. And literally, we're watching the soccer match, right? And I'm going, ooh, okay, we're getting close. I still don't know what the hell going on. I literally bite into my burger because I look down. I miss the goal. And I look up and I just see the guys running their cheer. And I'm like, God, right? Go back. We're talking. I'm watching the game. Look down, bite into some fries, look back up. The other team is scoring. I'm like, God damn it. Like, I'm missing the entire match. But it's not something that just keeps me engaged. But listen, it's what, the most popular sport in the world?
Yeah. And honestly, for new people, I don't know how. I really don't, because they just don't do a good job ingratiating you outside of saying, we drink a lot and scream. And you're like, I like loud noises.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, Jason, the world is bigger than the U.S.
It is. You know, it is
bigger than the U.S. You know, NASCAR sure is for everyone.
Just making left turns all day.
I don't know. I don't know, man. So what do you think about the Packers in this Brett Favre? Jesus Christ, that's how old I am. I'm talking about Brett Favre. What do you think about the situation between the Packers and Rodgers? Like, it just does not, it's just not working.
Well, I mean, you know, he wants to be the Lone Ranger, right? I mean, it's just, and he's part of a team. You know, he just, it's weird. You know, he's got a broken thumb, sprained thumb, whatever it is. He's like, I'm just going to keep playing. And I don't know if there's something in his contract that says you get a certain, you know, kick if you play an extra number of minutes or do this, that, or the other. But I mean, if I'm the team, now's a good time as any to try out Love. Your starter's hurt. And by the way, he's showing you he'll play hurt. You know, it would be Aaron Rodgers. They come back to him like, all right, we need you. You know, Love unfortunately got hurt. And he's like, nah, my thumb's bothering me, dog. You're right. I just need to set this out. Like, you used to play four games with a bad thumb. We lost them all. It's like,
right.
Yeah, different story now.
Yeah.
You know, different story. Yeah. But I mean, I think the guy, you know, Green Bay's interest. They had this problem with Favre. They're having this problem with Rodgers. They have a hard time letting go and moving on. Green Bay, you got to break up. Okay. You got to break up with him. It's time to go.
Yeah. I, you know, again, I never liked, I thought the Davante Adams move was the worst move ever. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And I know Davante wanted to go play with his guy, you know, because him and Carr are good friends. I know he wanted to go do that. But the Packers' reasoning was, well, it'll just make Aaron so he doesn't, you know, focus on just one guy. Right. He'll spread the ball around. I'm thinking like, yeah, but that one guy is a really, really good one guy.
Yeah. And now you won a lot of games with one guy.
Yeah. Now you have a bunch of no guys, right? A bunch of, you know, again, no knock on them, but they're not Davante Adams. And when you put Davante Adams on your team, that opens up other opportunities for everyone else to get the ball. Right. That opens up the field more for your running attack. And so to me, it was never a good move. And to me, the more surprising thing was Aaron Rodgers not being vocal about that. Right. Because he used to be very vocal about getting more help, getting more people around him. Like, I'll never forget. When he was at the draft, there was a draft, it was a few years ago, and he thought they were going to draft, you know, draft him a receiver, right? They ended up drafting Love. So he was like, whoa, like, I thought we were trying to make a run. We're trying to make a run here. And you're in here drafting basically my heir apparent. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're drafting the guy who's going to, you know, eventually, you know, take my spot. You didn't get me another player, another playmaker. You went and got someone to eventually take over. And ever since then, I feel like that relationship has been extremely rocky. And it just hasn't been the same since.
No, it's true. You know, and that's where I say you got to break up. Just move on. You're going to have some rough years. It's going to be fine. Yeah.
This is that time. But this is that time for you to go through those rough years, right? This is it. Because you're not going to find another Aaron Rodgers anytime soon. We don't know what Love is really going to be. So unless you're going to go get you know, another veteran quarterback from somewhere, this is going to be that year where the Packers start to go in decline for a few years. I think this is that year.
Yep. Go get Garoppolo. He's nice and consistent. His contract's up.
Yeah. He'll definitely do something in Green Bay. The population might increase by 2 or 3% with Garoppolo down there.
We're running around. Rodgers was a former MVP. We got, of course, MVPs in the race. It's usually always quarterbacks. Who you got? Who do you think, you know, if they're not on the field? And this is the one thing where I think MVP gets a little bastardized, right? But because it is the most valuable player, like, if they're not there, is that team in that position?
Right.
Right. Yeah. You know, and so it's interesting. I mean, Kansas City, you've got Mahomes, you've got Tua, Lamar Jackson. And it's not, by the way, it's not Lamar's fault that they're losing. That defense that defense is a screen door in a windstorm. I mean, these cats are like, are we up by 20? I bet we can give up 35 and a quarter.
Right. No. Right.
Yeah, we can do it. We'll try hard.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. You know, I think it's interesting. It's not talked about, you know, because this is the MVP argument, right? Like, you're not going to get, even though he's winning and doing well, you're not going to get Jimmy G, you know, Kirk Cousins. I don't think you're going to get him just because they don't bring that flair. You know, they bring that consistency. They don't bring that flair. Who you got?
Man, you know what? I think there was at some point where I felt like Lamar was just playing at – he was playing at an MVP level. Josh Allen was playing at an MVP level. They're still playing well, right? But they're not necessarily winning – those close games and are making crucial mistakes at crucial moments in the game. Right. Yeah. And again, that's, you know, I mean, there's 11 guys, there's 11 other guys or 10 other guys on the field that's supposed to be helping you out. So it's not just all on you, but the quarterback position is the most visible position out there. So, I mean, all the guys that are really dominating are quarterbacks, right? Whether it's Patrick Mahomes, whether it's Tua, whether it's Jalen Hurts, whether it's Josh Allen, whether it's, Lamar Jackson. Those are the guys who are kind of dominating the MVP conversation in my opinion. So I was leaning very much to Lamar Jackson, but I think right now the guy who's just playing at a high level, maybe not his highest level, but still playing at a very high level, is Patrick Mahomes. I think he's still, I think he's still the top guy. He's got a what? He threw for 320 yards with one touchdown, one interception against the Rams. So, and he's playing against, now granted, the Rams aren't that good this year. I mean, they're not aren't that good. They aren't good this year. But he's still playing at an MVP level. And I think they're not who they would be if it wasn't for Patrick Mahomes. I mean, and remember, we didn't know what was going to happen with that offense once Tariq Hill left. And maybe they haven't missed a beat, but they still look pretty damn good to me.
I mean, Green Bay is looking down saying, we got rid of a good receiver. What happened? And Mahomes is like, yeah, spread it around. They're like, that's what we tried. He's like, yeah, spread it around. It's gonna be nice. And it just shows how good Patrick Mahomes is. It's funny. I want in my heart of hearts, I want to pick Jalen. I want to because I just like the way he plays. However, we've seen the Eagles with a good team and a Nick Foles quarterback win a Super Bowl.
Yeah. Is
Right?
Nick Foles even still in the league?
I'm sure he's somewhere.
Back up
But yeah,
somewhere?
back up
Crazy.
somewhere. But so I don't, would they be 8-1? Maybe not. Would they be winning that division? Probably. I mean, and Dallas is good, but that defense really did them well.
Oh,
Now,
yeah.
you got Dak. He's what I think he's number one in touchdowns since he's been back.
Wow, I
And
did not know that. Really?
yeah, turning it on, which is great. I mean, I think he's going to probably get his hat in the ring there for MVP. But
That's
I'm with you,
amazing, considering a couple of weeks ago they were talking
right?
about whether or not Dak was worth the money.
I know. Just like, hey, do you think we should pay him? So I would go with Patrick Mahomes just because of one, the Green Bay comparison. Both lost top receivers. Both those receivers are doing very well, though not a winning record for the Raiders, but stats wise, doing extremely well for their teams. So it's not like they fell off when they went to a different team. So Mahomes is surrounded by his trusted tight end and a bunch of new people. And they're running the ball because now defenses must respect how Mahomes is going to spread that ball around. And what they have for talent still in the receiving core. And I would argue that the Green Bay receivers, like, yeah, they're not Devontae Adams, but they're still talented. And once again, you look down with what they're doing, it shows how valuable Patrick Mahomes is.
He's elevated his game, right? Because I think he was so I think Tyreek Hill, I don't want to say bailed him out in a lot of situations, but Tyreek Hill made some amazing plays. I mean, he turned a lot of nothing plays into something plays. And
Absolutely.
as dynamic as Patrick's throw was, what Tyreek did, after the catch, getting down the field was as equally impressive, right? But now, to your point, he doesn't have that. And he's still balling, right? He's still getting the ball into his playmakers' hands. He's still diversifying the rock. He's still doing all those things. And he's leading the NFL in passing yards with 3,585 yards and passing touchdowns at 29. So you take away the most prolific player in the NFL, that's my weapon, and I'm still putting up these numbers. I just don't see how you don't give him the, just don't see how he's not leading
You
the
gotta
NFL.
tip the hat, give him a nod.
Yeah. Because most people who lose that type of weapon, right, they can't do anything because that's been their crutch, right? That's been their go-to guy. And Patrick Mahomes hasn't done anything but kept it moving. He didn't go into the newspaper, he didn't go into the media and complain about, oh, I've lost Tyreek, right? It's like we're gonna keep doing what we're doing. I got confidence in Andy Reid. I got confidence in our offense. We're just gonna keep doing what we're doing.
And you know what? Beginning of the year, those guys dropped some balls. They just did. Working with new people. Jerry Rice would only catch balls from Joe Montana when he was the quarterback because of the spin on the ball. Only person who could throw him a ball. You know, and look what they've turned around to, man. Kudos to him. Hats off to him. If anything, Coach of the Year, Andy Reid, keeping the team together and being this successful.
And keeping guys wanting to stay in Kansas City. Keeping
It
guys
ain't the tourism
content.
board or the weather. Okay. It's
Man,
not the tourism board. It's not the weather.
that's a whole nother level of recruiting right there when you can keep guys. Now, granted, they're making a ton of money, not much convincing, but when you can still keep, your core guys together, in a city, that's not a huge market. That's great coaching also. That's culture, right? You're establishing a great winning culture right there.
Good stuff. I really like that. But yeah, it's true. I mean, I've been there. Folks, it's not that it's a bad place, but it gets
Yeah, I
winter.
mean,
It gets
listen,
winter.
it's all
Okay.
right. I remember when I was released by Jacksonville, and Kansas City was one of the teams that wanted to bring me in to work out, and I remember flying in. And I was like, oh my, this is one dreary ass city. I don't even know if I want to have this workout. So,
You're like, man, Seattle's jealous of this dreary. This
yeah.
is awful.
I was like, what is this? Like, no, I'm good, man. I just might as well go on to retire. But yeah, man. I don't know. Jason, we talked about Michigan a little bit. Obviously, the college football playoffs have come out. Michigan is 2, Georgia is 1, TCU is 4, or TCU is 3, USC is 4. And so a friend of mine asked me, how far do I think Michigan can go? And one of the things I was thinking about was we've really had some dominant teams in the past, 10, 15 years, right? Especially like the Bamas, the USC's, the Clemson's, the LSU's, really, I mean dominant, I mean like dominant Georgia, really dominant teams. There aren't really any dominant teams this year where you look and you're like, wow, like how Georgia was last year, right? Where just, NFL players all over the place, right? Bama, dominant teams, Jerry Jeudy type wide receivers, right? Julio Jones type wide receivers, right? Marquee name guys. I don't really see that in this year's college football playoffs. So when people say, can Michigan win it all? I think because there's a lack of dominance, their chances of winning it is far greater than any other year that they've had, because there isn't anyone who's really, really dominant. Every team has a flaw. USC has a flaw. TCU has flaws. Georgia almost lost to Missouri. Every team that's in the CFP has a flaw, has played a game where they probably should have lost, right? Has played some close games, have played not up to the potential or stardom that we've seen in previous years, right? True dominance. And so I think Michigan has a good chance, just as good a chance as anybody in that CFP top four. So how far will Michigan go? If Michigan can do what they did to Ohio State, if they can be balanced with the run and the throw, especially with the teams that are in the CFP, only team I see potentially beating them is Georgia. And I think even that wouldn't be the game that it was last year. Because last year, Georgia was just on another level. Mm-hmm. That defense was just on another level, right? But that's not the same team. That's not the same team as last year.
Yeah, true.
So they've got an opportunity.
No, that's very true. I mean, I think they can go all the way just because when healthy, because Georgia doesn't have that defense they did last year. I don't know who's doing what Ohio State did in the first half to stop the run. I really don't. I don't see any three of those other teams doing that. Just don't. Your quarterback's only going to get better and have more confidence, especially after this win.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you got that. I don't know any of the other three teams coming off historic wins that's getting them into the playoffs. So you add all that up in momentum and youth and just that, you know, who cares? The world's on fire. Let's go.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome. And now you have one thing that those other three teams don't have. You all of a sudden have a little bit of more depth.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the stage that you played and the players that played against Ohio State.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that depth, that moment. I mean, what's bigger? No offense to the playoffs.
Yeah.
But I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Beating Ohio State in the shoe. Come on.
Yeah. That right? game was the most watched game. Let me pull up the stats. Because I saw that. I was like, what? So that game was the most watched regular season game in college football ever on Fox with 17 million viewers. And it was the most watched regular season college football game on any network in 11 years.
Dang.
See, when you talk about stage.
Yep.
That's the stage.
That's the stage. And you had third stringers out there on the stage. You know, and doing well, not just filling a void, but pushing
Michigan
the
had
ball
freshmen.
Forward.
Michigan had true freshmen on defense playing in the third and fourth quarter, like in rotation with the starters. So a lot of those guys got valuable playing time. We're not talking about blowout playing time. We're talking about game still close playing
Anything
time.
Anything can happen. Harrison Jr. over there. Anything can happen.
Yeah.
Anything can happen. And so that's why I lead towards Michigan. You know, now we'll get some Michigan people and be like, Jay, stop hyping it up like that.
Oh, no, they're going to love it. They're going to love you hyping it up. Let me tell you, I was getting into it with Michigan fans because they were like, Chris, you were dogging the offensive, you know, play calling all year. I'm like, yeah, because it was shit. Like, you cannot look at that and tell me that you were happy with the offensive play calling. Because, you know, our red zone was awful, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're scoring points, but we're not getting touchdowns. We're kicking field goals. And a lot of the times we look lost when we got into the red zone. Yeah. So, of course, you know, Michigan fans were like, oh, we told you, Chris, we told you. I'm like, listen, the dog, you know, my dad used to say the sun shines on a dog's ass every once in a while.
Yep.
And again, Michigan had to play the game it needed to play, the game that it hadn't played all year long at the right moment. And they did. And credit to the coaching staff for making those adjustments and understanding that, because a lot of times Michigan would just do, you know, they're going to run into the wall 1,000 times, right?
Yeah.
Because they want to really, really impose their will and really impose their identity, which is physical football. They really, really want to do that. But a lot of times they would do that to the detriment of their own success because, you know, you constantly trying to run up the middle doesn't mean it's going to be successful.
Yeah.
But credit to Michigan coaches. They said, listen, if they're going to plug up the box, they're going to put 8 men in the box. We're going to take some shots. And they did. And it worked. And I'm happy. But anybody who says they saw this coming, you know, I doubt that you really, really believe that.
You didn't see this coming. You were scared. The running game wasn't working. And guess what? As every fan should have been, nervous, especially after Illinois. You should have been nervous.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And, you know, to have one game where things came out right, cool. And we're all happy about that.
Yeah.
But to your point, don't play. You knew this all along, and they were setting Ohio State up.
I told
up
you,
and...
Chris, we were going to be able to throw the ball. I'm like, well, listen, I need you to pick out my next lottery tickets then. Because if you saw this coming, then what's the lottery numbers?
Give them to me. I'll split. We'll go halvesies.
We'll go halvesies.
That's right.
You know? So, all right, man. Well, Jason, I appreciate you as always. Folks, we appreciate you. Thanks for tuning in to this episode. Michigan is playing Purdue in the Big Ten Championship. That is just amazing. To say that back-to-back wins, back-to-back embarrassing wins over Ohio State is just, you know, that's something that every Michigan player dreams of. And I'm happy that these kids were able to pull it off. They deserve it. The coaches deserve it. Now they just got one more game to make sure they get into the college football playoffs. I mean, I think they're locked regardless, but as in fighting, you don't want to leave it up to the judges.
That's right.
Don't want to leave it up to the judges. So again, folks, we appreciate you. Thanks for tuning in to Plugged In with Chris Howard, me and Jason Jepson on the podcast. Again, every Thursday, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you can find your podcast. We'll talk to you soon.
Peace.